Welcome to the Big Careers Small Children podcast. My name is Verena Hefti. I believe that no one should have to choose between becoming a CEO and enjoying their young children. For much too long, brilliant people have found themselves stuck on the career ladder when they have children, and that leads to gender inequality in leadership and the same stale, mostly male, middle-class people leading our organizations. We absolutely must change this, and I hope that many of you listening right now to this podcast will progress to the most senior leadership roles possible in a way that works for you and for your families, so you can make the decisions that make our world and our organizations better places. Beyond the podcast, I am the CEO and founder of the social enterprise Leaders Plus, which is all about giving parents the support and space to progress to senior leadership in a way that works for them and their families. We have lots of free events and also lots of resources on leadersplus.org, where you can download helpful toolkits such as on returning from maternity leave, or securing a promotion as a working parent, or thriving or surviving, depending how you look at it, as a dual career couple. We also have an award-winning global fellowship program for working parents who have big dreams for their careers but don't want to sacrifice everything for it. You will join a tight-knit, supportive group of people. You'll get space to think about what you want for your life, for your family, for your career, a senior leader mentor, and a lot of targeted support in order to get you where you would like to be. And you can find all that on leadersplus.org/fellowship for the details. The next application deadline is on 20th March 2024, and you can download the brochure on leadersplus.org. Today I'm chatting to Jane Green. She's a mentor on the Leaders Plus Fellowship, and she was the first partner at EY in the UK to work flexibly back in the 1990s, bravely carving out a unique arrangement back in the days where no one worked flexibly, and certainly not in an industry like she was working in. She regularly gets absolutely rave reviews from the fellows she mentors, and so I'm delighted I managed to get her on the podcast to share with me what in her experience are the key ingredients to find a flexible working arrangement that works for you, and also how to convince your employer to get on board. I'm afraid this particular episode was recorded when my kids were in the house with their dad, so there is a fair bit of background contribution, let's call it, from them, but I'm sure you won't mind. Enjoy the conversation.
I used to be a partner in EY. I was a partner for 28 years. I have been married to my husband Rob for 44 years, and he's a golf journalist. So when we had the children when they were very young, he was often away quite a lot going to golf tournaments around the world. So that was quite a pinch point in our child caring sort of arrangements. My two sons are 31 and 34, and I have a grandson who is two. I joined the program right at the start because it was offered to men and women, and that was what intrigued me most, I guess because I have sons. And I'd seen a lot at EY, and I was seeing it with my son, my eldest son and his wife, that sort of dual career families were increasingly needing to have a special program like this that addressed the fact that you've got two people, high potential and young families, and there were bound to be a need for help and pinch points.
I think that's so true, what you're saying. And it's quite funny. It's weird how this topic of dual career families has come up now, because actually this evening I'm chairing an event for dual career couples, where we have some people who've been on the program, where both husband and wife in heteronormative setups have been on the program. And it's very, very interesting. And obviously we have workshops for both. And so if you are on the program as a man, and then you can bring your wife along, should you happen to have one. Interesting. And we should say you are a mentor in the Leaders Plus Fellowship and have been from the very start. So yeah. Thank you very much for that. Can you tell me one thing that you used to believe at the time, before you even had children, about combining a big career with young children, that you've changed your mind on completely?
obviously, when I go back to pre-children, we're talking about the 80s, and I think then some legislation has helped very, very much. It's a very, very different atmosphere. I think it was the luck of the draw in terms of the type of employer you were with. I can flip back and think in one partnership I eventually ended up in, the partners were all white males with wives who stayed at home. So they couldn't possibly get the fact that you had working parents. And yet I have a very strong example in my first partnership. So this would be late 80s, where the then senior partner, very white male, wife who stayed at home, one of the new partners was going through a divorce, had two young children, and wanted to demonstrate how she could look after those children whilst being a partner. And he back then went to the court and said, she can work as flexibly as she wants to accommodate the children. So a thought that would have never happened in that era. So I think the thing that's changed most is that people's attitudes have changed and there's legislation to support it. So people have the right to do that. I think the thing that concerns me most is that a lot of organisations think, you know, we have our flexible working arrangements in our policy, we have part-time working arrangements in our policy, we might have a handful of people who are using the policy, so we've done it. And therefore, anybody new wanting to work flexibly part-time, they'll do it the same as the other people. And the thing I feel passionately about is that everybody is different. Everybody's personal circumstances are different. When I was in EY, I had an internal role in risk management, and I had four ladies, all accountants, working for me. And every one of them had a different flexible working arrangement because of what their husbands did, where they lived, their actual responsibilities, and how much they needed to be in the office, and how close their parents were. They all needed different things, but it's very frequent. And on this program, I find that people will say, oh, well, this is what's worked for Joe Blogg, so it must work for you. And I always encourage the people I'm in to think of them as themselves. Don't think in a box, think outside the box. What would make a difference to you, and go for that.
Am I right to say that you were the first partner in the UK at Ernst & Young to have a flexible working arrangement in 1998?
Yeah.
So that must have taken a lot of guts to arrange. Can you paint us a picture? Why did you say, I must have this? And then how did you go about getting it when nobody else has ever done that at that very senior role? We should say, for the people who aren't familiar with the term partner, that is as senior as you can get in a very competitive industry in consulting, isn't it?
Okay. I was going through a phase where I was working very, very long hours. So I would, you know, sometimes not got home until 2 a.m. I was working on a major corporate finance transaction. And one day I got home very late and I didn't want to serve my husband. So I went into the spare bedroom, and my younger son is a very early riser. And he suddenly appeared next to me and he said, there you are. You're never at home anymore. I've got a plan. Sam was probably about 6. In fact, he wasn't. He was 5. And he said, I'm not going to go to school today and you're going to stay at home and we're going to have a nice day together. And I knew I couldn't do that because I was expected back, you know, on this transaction. And I had a Jane Green Get a Life project. I really focused on that. And I worked out that if I could just have half a day a week not working, then the weekends would be much better with the children. Remember, back then, you couldn't have home deliveries of anything or shopping or whatever. You had to come and buy it. So the weekends were always very busy. No online shopping at all. All the children's clothes, shoes, everything had to go somewhere. And I worked out that that would make a real difference to me. And I'm a great believer is that when you want something, you need to be very clear in terms of what you're asking for. I was asking also in the context of having worked exceptionally hard with these young children. I travelled abroad a lot for a couple of clients and been very clear, this is what I want. And also, I went to the top. So I went to the managing partner of the UK firm. I thought long and hard about who I could go to because, you know, if you go sort of slightly lower down, then you can always appeal above. But I thought this was my one shot. And if I could convince him, and you know, I explained to him that from the business's point of view, I wasn't asking to work 4.5 days a week. I was asking for, eventually I went for, it wasn't quite 4.5 days, whatever it was. This 6 weeks was going to make the difference to me. But I explained to him that in the times when I was very busy, I would be working full time, that it would give me extra time when the children were off. And he said yes. And it made the world of a difference. But I want to talk about how important I think of flexibility as a two-way thing. So some of those days that I was having off were cast in stone. School plays, right? That could not be changed. Or remember, I was doing that when my children were quite grown up. Or Ben was at university in Oxford and I was going to spend the day with him. Cast in stone. Other days, I was just having a catch-up on things around the house. And so if somebody said, could you do a phone call or could you do a few hours work that day? I'd say, yes, I can. But that means that that day I haven't taken a whole day off. I've taken a half day off. So that there was a give and take. And I do think that that's important in terms of when you get to a senior position, then to say, I'm not there on Friday and I won't do anything can be very difficult. And remember, I was in an organisation where I was client-facing. I hadn't got an internal role. I was looking after clients.
Mm. And when you think back about you walking into this office and having the conversation with the managing partner,
mm-hmm.
was there something that you did that made it more likely to be a yes?
It was so important to me, I'd really made it a top priority in terms of thinking about it. It was so important to me that I rehearsed what I was going to say. And it was so important to me, I only had not only rehearsed it, I'd made sure it was very succinct. I really wasn't waffling. I made sure I didn't make it emotional. I think it was a business proposition. I made sure that he understood that we would review it every year to see if it was working on both sides. And I thought about some of the things he might object to. So I was working with a client who might suddenly go out and buy another company. It did it a lot. And so I was able to say, well, if that happens, I can flex around that and take the time at a later time. It didn't really matter to me that it was half a day a week or a day a week. It was this extra time that I had for me and the family.
Mm.
I think planning is really important and thinking about what they might object to and also where you might not give in, concede. So one of the ladies I was talking to about who worked with me on the internal role, when she came back after her first maternity leave, and it was a very senior position that she was coming into. She was at a senior manager level, and she came back and said she'd like to work 2 days a week. And I didn't really need to think about it very long, but I said to her, I'm really sorry, you know, for this type of role, that's not going to be enough time for me. But what about if we say you do 2 days in the office and 2 half days at home? And she said, yes, that sounds perfect. And so she did that.
Brilliant. And this is just an example of how obviously you were her line manager, but also you were informally mentoring her. And I think we cannot point out enough how radical it was at the time for you to arrange that flexible working request in that type of senior role in that industry. And you've now gone to mentor lots and lots of people around flexible working, around promotion, including on the Leaders Plus Fellowship. And I'm just interested in your observing the people who are at my life stage today. What are the most common mistakes they make when they're trying to negotiate flexible working?
One thing is thinking too far forward. So probably if you've got very young children, so babies, so think about something that would work until they get to school. Don't bother thinking about what's going to happen when they get to school until about, you know, 6 months out. So focus on the here and now. I think not looking at it from the employer's point of view is another thing that people make mistakes, and not thinking out of the box enough. To some extent, it's quite easy working out a flexible working arrangement or a part-time working arrangement when children are preschool. I think that's fairly sort of straightforward because, you know, they need looking after when you're not there. That's fairly straightforward. When they get to school, it's more difficult. And then the other mistake looking out, I think some people think, well, once they get to secondary school, it's an absolute doddle. I'm home and dry. And I couldn't disagree with that more. You know, if I look at my sons and when they had critical exams to go to they were in the private system. So they both went to Westminster. And when they were doing the exams to Westminster, that was a time when I would suddenly start working at home all the time because they were off school revising, similarly for GCSEs and A-levels. So I think people don't think out of the box enough. They look at people in their organisation who are working flexibly or working part-time. They think, well, I must do something like that.
That's interesting. So can you give an example of something that you've seen that is truly out of the box? What do you mean by out of the box?
Yeah, well, somebody I've been mentoring recently, child changed school, goes to secondary school, major event in life. Child starts school, age 4 or 5, whether they go, depending on when they were born. I've seen people say to their employer, actually, I'm going to, because you're entitled, you know, to 2 weeks unpaid leave per child. So they'll take some of that and they'll say, and I need to take some extra time off unpaid on top of that, because up until half term, I'm only going to be working between 9:30 and 3:00. Once they're into it, after the first half term, then I'll go back to a normal arrangement.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting example because nobody ever tells you how disruptive the school start can be. You think that it continues, relatively continuous childcare, but no, it can very easily be a full half term, 5 or 6 weeks, with quite disrupted childcare. And then also, of course, children who are very tired at the end of the day and who really want daddy or mommy to be there for them until they're settled.
Absolutely. I think the sort of Sammy, who my youngest son, who got me onto flexible working, when he first went to school and we went to pick him up, after his first day, we said, how was it? He said, well, it was quite nice, but I don't think I'm going back tomorrow.
I love how he comes through as a very strong leader with very clear opinions on this podcast.
And my eldest son, when he first went, we said, what did you do at school today? I cried. You know, and you just think, oh God, what a terrible mother I've been, or father, or whatever. So just thinking about things that will make a difference, then suddenly things are much tougher for young children than they were with my boys because of the internet.
Mm.
And I think particularly with young little girls, it's really much harder because the way they look and act is a really big deal. And you suddenly may come across something horrible, you know, like a little bit of bullying with a young child. And you suddenly feel, gosh, I've got to do something here. I've got to be around more. Well, why not go to your employer? Explain what's happening and say, I just need to flex a bit.
Too often, organizational structures are not set up for working parents to thrive and progress their careers. And that's one of the root causes for the frequent feelings of guilt or feeling stuck in our careers that many of us experience. It is a root cause of why so many parents are plateauing in their careers, which leads to that terrible lack of women in senior leadership. We at Leaders Plus help to change this through our amazing community of alumni from our fellowship program, all our work with employers, and of course our research. But right here, right now, in an often imperfect environment, I believe working parents do deserve support to develop and progress their careers in a way that works for them. Too often it is lonely in a leadership role with children, and I believe we all deserve a supportive community of peers around us. In a hectic world, you deserve time and space to think what you want for your career and family life so you can make it happen. In a world where the privileged learn through old boys' clubs about how to progress their careers, we all deserve to access that information about what really gets you to your dream role, so that we can implement it in a way that works for us, that doesn't require us going for drinks with the boss every evening on long evenings out because we want to be there for our children. Those are just some of the reasons why I set up the Leaders Plus Fellowship Program, and I would love for you to consider to apply. Here are some of the voices from our previous fellows.
The Leaders Plus Fellowship has ultimately, it's changed my life. The fellowship really has changed my life, and I'm in the process of returning to work now, and I can't wait. I can't wait to make a change, to put myself first, to build up my team, to build up those around me, and to really make a difference. Thank you.
I completed the Leaders Plus program in 2021 as I was returning from mat leave with my second child. It was game changing for me. My advice to anyone considering whether they deserve such a support program is don't hesitate. Do prioritize, do fight for the time to get clear on why and how you will work it. I offer my absolute support and encouragement to anybody that's considering the program.
Download the brochure from our website, leadersplus.org, and if it is of interest, apply by 20th March 2024.
One thing that is coming up time and time again, including in our recent research that we did, where we did a survey with almost 1,000 people, that sometimes people fear that they're seen as not so committed to their job if they work flexibly. And apparently 4 in 10 people have been questioned, 4 in 10 women, I should say, have been questioned on their commitment. And I think roughly 23% of men have been questioned around their commitment as a result of being a working parent. And I was just wondering, what is your experience of how you ask for that flexible working, but also come across as someone who wants to be good at their job, who wants to progress, who is committed?
Okay. I think the most important thing as you're starting to think about this is to reassess where you are in the organization, where you are on the promotion track. Are you clear in terms of how the organization values you and rates your performance? I think that's really important. I find it fascinating how large organizations with fantastic policies for people with children can have really rubbish career development activities. I think you need to be quite clear in terms of where you're going, what you've achieved. Because the reason employers are more accommodating now is they don't want to lose high-performing people. They'd rather have 60%, 80% of a high-performing person than none of that person. And so, obviously, the people on Leaders Plus are high-performing people, but be very clear in terms of what you're good at. And certainly I find with a lot of ladies I mentor, or those ladies I mentored or coached back at EY, is that women aren't very good at letting people know what they've been doing and what they've been achieving.
To take it back a step, you mentioned it's important to know how much the organization values you and how you are seen as to perform. How do you go about finding that out, apart from asking at your appraisal, what's my performance rating?
I think anybody who's on this program, because the purpose of this program is to allow people to accelerate their careers and make the best out of, meet their potential in their careers whilst looking after young families, I think it is the responsibility of the individual to understand where they are in that process. And most organisations will have some framework around appraisal. I find it very valuable with the people I mentor and also the people back at EY when we were looking at promotions to clearly articulate, this is what I'm really, really good at. These are the areas that I perhaps need to improve, and this is what I am doing to do that.
Interesting. One reason why I really wanted to interview you is because there's something magical about you. I don't know, not to be cheesy, but there's something, it seems every single person you mentor tells me that you're really good at helping them to get to good outcomes. And I think the root cause is that you're very good at helping people negotiate well. I was wondering if you can distill your wisdom in your, what are your top 3 tips for negotiating? Let's say you want promotion. What are the top 3 things you should do to prepare for that conversation to make sure it goes well, or to say in the conversation?
One of the things I made some notes on, right? The first thing I would say is, this is the most important thing in your life. I was having a conversation with one of my mentees about this morning. So it should be top of the agenda, right? So if you're thinking, right, I want to go for some flexible working, part-time working, your lead time into that process from first thinking about it, you're probably going to give yourself a couple of months to actually really sort out in your own mind what will work. My first thing is, put it top of the agenda. At the start of your working week, what am I going to do this week to sort this out? And at the end of the week, what did I do? What have I done? Because it's the easiest thing in the world to let it slip. You say, I was too busy because this came along, and so I didn't do it. But it has to be your priority. And I feel with a lot of the people I mentor, I'm their conscience. Just a minute, we agreed. This was important to you. Are you telling me it's not important now? No, yes, it is important. So can we get back to that? The next thing is a bit like when I did mine with the managing partner, is plan, plan, plan. Be very clear. And in most meetings, people will remember three things about you. So you want to get over, this is why organization, you value me. This is what I'm good at. And this is what I want from the organization. And going back to the flexible, this is how I can be flexible. I think the thing employers worry about is, what if an emergency happens at work? You know, a lot of the people on the Leaders Plus program are in quite senior positions. So suddenly something comes up and they're needed on a day where they were not working because they're flexible. Then what can you offer as an employer to say, employees say, well, actually, I can work around that. Don't worry. Because you might sit there thinking, oh, God, you know, but if I'm doing that, I'm going to be doing it, you know, if I'm not working Fridays, I'm going to be doing it all the time. Emergencies happen two or three times a year. You're not giving up very much, but you're showing your commitment to the organisation. And then the other thing I would say is, once you've got your plan, treat it like a job interview. This is one of the most important, inverted commas, presentations you'll ever make, because this is going to make your life a lot better. And try it out with somebody who's already working flexibly or part-time, who you know, either in your organisation or on this wonderful Leaders Plus programme.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. And what's your advice about dealing with a no? So if you have done all this preparation, you've done as well as you could in the meeting, but they say, well, actually, sorry, no.
One of the things I perhaps should, I don't use that word very often, have said in the last bit, is think very carefully who you're going to ask. It doesn't necessarily have to be your line manager. So if your line manager, in my example, of all the people that I used to work with, is somebody who has a wife who's never worked at home, that might not be the right person to ask. But try and find somebody in the organisation who is a champion for family. People often have family groups in organisation or women's groups. Try and find that person and consider going to that person with the request. If you say no and you've gone to a traditional line manager, you probably would say no, go to one of those people above. But I would, this is a ridiculous phrase, not flog a dead horse. My grandson sometimes comes out with these most ridiculous phrases like that, and it makes me think, where did that come from? It's such a thing. But if you've tried it once, you've tried it twice, you've tried it three times, and it's not working, stand back, think about the survey. 44% thought that their organisation isn't the right one, and maybe it is time to jump.
Interesting. And if you are jumping, do you have any reflections about how to find out if the organisation that has a beautiful website and advertises how friendly they are to working parents, whether they're really friendly? How do you find out what the organisation really is like before you sign the contract?
That is actually quite hard. You have a fairly good idea in terms of the rigour of the interview process and the sorts of questions that they ask you. I think if you're approaching a new organisation as a working parent, then I'll come back to large versus small in a minute. If it's a large organisation, then ask to attend one of the working parents meetings. to get a feel for the sorts of things that they're talking about would be another idea. This is an interesting one, large versus small organisations. The one great advantage of a large organisation, they have a lot more people. And so if somebody's working flexibly, there's often somebody there that can step in for them. If you're working for a small organisation, that becomes a lot more difficult. However, in a small organisation, you can often be more valued and your promotion prospects are much better because you can be noticed by the people at the top, whereas in a large organisation, you're invisible.
You talk a lot about making yourself noticed by the people on the top. What have you implemented in your own career to be noticed by the people who make decisions?
My organisation, because I was working directly with clients and the clients were people that were paying the money, was making sure the clients, obviously I was serving the clients to a very high standard, but they were telling the people at the top how good I was. It was coming from a different source. The other thing that is really, really important is don't be afraid to ensure that people in the organisation know what you've been achieving and working at a very high standard. I mean, we've had these conversations personally before. Sometimes people find it difficult to say, I'm actually really good at this, because they think it's bragging.
Mm. And have you ever felt guilty about promoting yourself in that way? Or are you naturally good at that?
No, I'm not naturally good at that. But working in an organisation that was predominantly male, men are much better at doing it than women. And so I watched men, as private, I would say, being economical with the truth. So if they had sort of done about 60% of something, they'd talk as if they'd done 120. Mm. Whereas women would always be the reverse.
Mm. Interesting.
I found, certainly at EY, probably more so because I was always helping people with promotion, that working with the female group, sometimes it was really, really difficult to, when they were planning for a promotion, to get them to think clearly enough about all their achievements and also devote enough time to it.
Absolutely. And I want to turn the conversation around and focus on the employer. So, you know, sometimes when you go and you have that flexible working request conversation, you already feel on the back foot. You already feel like, oh my goodness, I was able to give 24/7 to my employer, which anyways, I'm not a big fan. I don't think that makes you very effective, but there are some people who were workaholics, to be honest, I was one of them. Mm-hmm. And then you just feel really guilty sometimes of making that flexible working request. And you know that rationally you shouldn't feel guilty, but you still do feel it. Can you help turn this on our heads by sharing what the biggest benefit to an employer is in your view of enabling a flexible working request?
Okay, sort of step back slightly from that question and thinking about the individual again. This is really important to you. This is really, really important to your life so that you are able to spend more time with your family. The other thing I forgot, but then suddenly began to realise, that most children at 18 will go somewhere different. You know, they'll go off to university. And when they get to 18, the thing you're not going to say is, I wish I'd spent less time with them. You're always going to say, I wished I'd spent more time with them. This is not something that is an optional thing for you to do. It's something that you have to do. That's one thing. And I would then again go back to making it clear to the employer that they need you, making sure they understand what you're doing that is really good. It's quite interesting. One of the notes I made was this dual career thing you're doing this evening. I attended one probably about a year ago, and I always remember a couple from Cambridge, and the guy was the consultant at the hospital and worked at the university, and the lady who worked for a big charity in London. Hmm. And he said to the hospital on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, which was the day his wife was coming to London for her job, I can only work between, I don't know, whatever it was, because he was doing the drop-off and pick-up. But on the other days, I'm fine. I can do whatever you want. I can fit in with that. but it was a, it's not negotiable. I'm going in on that. I can't do this, but I can do that. And I think the starting on the can't, because that's non-negotiable, and then moving to the can is very helpful. But if that's on a, he's obviously a very senior doctor in a hospital, they're in short supply. I think that's one of the things people forget. Highly trained, qualified people at middle management who have the potential to promote to go to senior management are thin on the ground. They are wanted people.
Interesting. And we forget that so often, don't we? Oh, that's a helpful reminder. So on that note, most senior jobs are advertised. So if you look at director level jobs, they tend to be advertised as full-time. A lot of the listeners will be very keen to get to director level job, but also keen to do it part-time. And you and I, we had a chat about this before coming on air. Part-time is not the same as flexible working.
No.
But there will be people listening who see a job advertised, they fit the person's spec perfectly, but they want to do it in 4 days rather than five. Have you any experience of how to negotiate for that?
Well, the first thing is, I would always say, don't do it until you've got the job. That's absolutely fundamental. And the second thing I would think about is, okay, my ideal would be 4 days a week, but I'm starting a new job. So can I be flexible and say, well, actually, what I'd like to do is do 5 days 1 week and 4 days the next week. And that's my middle ground. And then once I've demonstrated that that works, then I'll go for my four and four.
Excellent advice. And we're coming towards the end of our conversation together. And so I usually ask all my guests at the end, two or three really small, simple things that someone can implement. So let's picture one of the listeners who got inspired by what you've just shared and wants to request flexible working or to start a process this week. What would be some very small things they can do to get the ball started rolling in the right way? And ideally, those small things should take no more than 5 minutes.
Okay. I would, first of all, cast out of your mind the doubt that I think one of the questions talked about working flexibly or reduced hours or whatever, there's a stigma. Stigma means disgrace. With my husband being a journalist, I'm a great one for looking up the exact meaning of words. And it's not a disgrace. Employers have to offer this. And so, you know, you have a right to it. And it's something. I think I'll go back to my focus, focus, focus. Okay, this is really important to me. I need to devote some time. And I need to think creatively. Think about the examples I've given about people starting school or whatever. I might not be one of those people that wants to just do 4 days or 3 days or 3.5 days. I might find it better to do something slightly different. Because the one thing that's really important is that if you're going to a senior person in the organization, this is your shot and you need to get it right. Plan very carefully what you want. The next thing I think I've said before, plan your presentation to whoever you're going to give it to so carefully that you've got it word perfect. And make sure every word that you use counts. I'll use a silly example. It's not a silly because she was a very great lady and I actually kept the cutting in one of my Leaders Plus files. When Meghan Markle and Prince Harry went on Oprah Winfrey, whatever she's called, and they talked about racist comments and various things that were made against them, the Queen issued a statement about it. And if you look at that statement, in which one of the greatest phrases is, others' recollections may differ, but if you look at the statement, every word is needed. No more words are needed, but all of the words are needed. So I think that's another thing. Don't waste time on waffle and don't get emotional about it. And I think sometimes ladies can get emotional. Try it out with a friend or try it out with somebody from Leaders Plus who's done it before and plan for objections. Plan for my example of the lady who wanted to work 2 days with me. And I said, I can cope with 2 days in the office, but I need 2 half days at home. So think about how you would move if asked to move.
Fantastic. I am going to ask just for a bonus advice, if you don't mind going. I'm interested. So what was the most common objection that you've heard people give, and what's your top tip to respond? If nothing comes to mind, as this was not in my briefing.
The job's too demanding. It can't be done in 4 days.
Mm-hmm. And how do you respond to that?
Well, I think it can. I've thought about it very carefully. So can we do a trial for 3 months? I found when I became a mother, I became more efficient at work as well. If you think in terms of the things that we're asked to do, and you know, you get a difficult request and you think, oh, I don't want to do that, I'm not going to do it. And I introduced this phrase, particularly with difficult things that I was a bit wary of, was Nike, just do it. And so really try and pack in as much as you can so you're not wasting time. And then the other thing, going back to the, you're doing a job and you want to know, I only do it in 4 days. Always think about the things you're doing that you don't need to do for the organization to get more time.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Jane. You've been absolutely wonderful.
Okay. All right. Take care. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening today. And a special thank you to all of those of you who have connected with me on LinkedIn in the last few weeks. I really, really love hearing from listeners and hearing how you enjoyed the show. So it means a lot. Thank you so much. If you'd like to be in touch in real life, do consider joining the Leaders Plus Fellowship Program. It is such a fantastic community of working parents supporting each other to find a way to get careers where you can make a big difference in senior roles, but also do that unapologetically in a way that works for us. And if you want to apply, then the deadline is 20th of March. You can download the brochure for the program on leadersplus.org. Podcasting is also quite a male-dominated environment. If you look at the top charting podcasts, especially outside of the kids and family space, very often it's all led by men. I can't remember the numbers, but it is very male-dominated. Just take a look at the charts. And interestingly enough, more females than males listen to podcasts. So another unequal space. And thank you for supporting this podcast by listening to it. But if you want to help us, I guess, have more influence in the space, then please do help by sharing it with your friends and by leaving a 5-star review. Thank you so much to all of those of you who've done that already. Have a wonderful week.